Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. This month we present a reading by Canadian author Rob Brunet. His evocative short fiction is often set in rural Ontario, and it usually has a noir tone, though he's equally adept at humor, as was evidenced in his highly praised first novel, Stinking Rich, published in 2014. Here's Rob reading his story, Skinny's Beach, from the February 2016 issue of EQMM.
They called him Skinny. A reflection on his wife's girth, and not the way his own gray-haired chest caved in atop his beer gut firm as a basketball. Skinny owed his physique and much of his temperament to a well-developed appetite for rum and cokes. He drank with his wife, Laureen, because of Laureen, and considerably more than her, none of which was easy. Mostly, he drank on the beach, or staring at the beach from his cottage. The tar-papered shack held the most sought-after spot on the bay, perched these 50 years above the river's best swimming hole. City kids came for swim lessons in the morning. Local teens drifted in afternoon, mixing best they could with the instructors. They shared cigarettes under the scorching sun, extinguishing their butts in the brilliant white sand or popping them into soda cans that were easier to collect. Not that they ever did. That was Skinny's job. In the morning, early, he'd drag a green garbage bag up and down while the sand was still cool, clearing the beach before Laureen rolled out of bed to complain about the mess. Litter aside, mornings were his favorite time. He'd amble 3 miles up or down river, soaking in the early sun, listening to the ripple of wavelets caress the fine sand and push bits of bark and tufts of weed onto the shore. West of Ottawa, the river widened to a mile across. The beach fringing the Ontario side disappeared under spring runoff, but dried to 100 feet or more by summer, about the time the cottagers showed up with their fume-belching ski boats and neon-clad inflatables. Skinny had walked the beach every day of every summer since his father bought the land and erected the kit cottage for little more than the cost of a decent car. In the decades since, cottages had gotten bigger. Most of the original shacks, like Skinny and Laureen's, had been torn down, replaced by stone, brick, or vinyl-sided monstrosities. They jutted 2-story glass fronts over the beach, demanding to be noticed, obliterating any sense of harmony with the pine, oak, and poplar that edged the endless beach. It was an affront, this moneyed arrival, transforming a tufted country landscape to one carved by sharp angles and neon-colored plastic lawn furniture. After a strong overnight wind, the fine sand would be smoothed and ribbed, pristine, all evidence of human feet wiped clear. In that hour after dawn, if he averted his eyes from the encroaching buildings and looked down the shore and across the water at the Gatineau Hills, Skinny could feel for a moment the freedom from care he'd known on the beach as a younger man. Back then, the nights had been best. After the children and the evening swimmers and the twilight strollers had had their fill, the teens came back. They arrived singly or in pairs and lit their bonfire high up on the beach, a stone's throw, a toss, really, from Skinny's front door. The beer and music lasted all night and might have filled a lifetime had he not bedded and wed Laureen. Alone in his mind, those mornings on the beach, Skinny was still that scrawny teen with cut-off jeans for a bathing suit, aching for attention, trying like hell to fit in, stealing beers from his father's fridge and passing them around the fire to curry favor. Be a big shot, or something close to it. Instead, by the time the beach awoke each morning, Skinny found himself across the breakfast table from his wife and master, dreading the day ahead. "They kept me up all night," Loreen said, spooning Cap'n Crunch into her mouth, shoving a stray piece in with her finger. She waved at the toaster as if he hadn't heard it pop. "You're supposed to get rid of him this summer." "It's a public beach," said Skinny. "I put up a fence, the township will tear it back down." He slathered butter on hot toast, making sure to reach the edges. She liked it done to the edges. She said, "Then we should move, damn it. This is my beach, been my life." Skinny added peanut butter and pointed at the jar of Nutella. She nodded and he plopped a scoop on each slice. When Loreen picked up the toast, it hung like a hammock between her fingers. She arced it toward her extended lower lip, making sure not a drop was lost. He watched the toast vanish in three efficient bites, then stood to clear the dishes while she ate the second piece. It wasn't his beach. He knew that. No more than he was Loreen's servant. But time and repetition have a way of making things fixed, true, and permanent, until they seem unalterable. Daily, after lunch, with thighs like twin oaks complete with burls and bumps that spoke volumes of her passion for sweets, Loreen dragged her vinyl lounger down the beach. She made a point of scraping across the teen's towels, covering them in twigs and tree bark and the kids' own cigarette butts. Each step as solid as the last, her feet spilling out the sides of her faux leather sandals, she'd make her way just shy of the wet sand near the water. She'd plunk her carcass down on the lawn chair, kick off her sandals, and wriggle her feet down to where the sand was cool. On cue, Skinny would bring her a tall glass of gin and pink lemonade, the latter mixed with a quarter less water than the can called for. "For that little extra kick," as Loreen liked to say. His own rum and cokes disappeared at twice the rate of his wife's imitation pink ladies, giving Skinny plenty of exercise marching to and from the cottage to replenish their goblets. "Hey, Skinny," taunted the Keens. "Thirsty, are we? Yo, bring me a beer, would you? And maybe a snack while you're at it." "Yeah, a snack. Look like you could use one." And Skinny, hangdog as ever, did his best to ignore until he'd finally snarl, "Pick up your trash, why don't you, you dirty punks?" "Hey, better hurry up, Skinny. The wife's looking parched. Something fierce, eh, Skinny? Thirsty like a whale, eh?" And when they made their cracks about Loreen's beluga-sized back end, he'd sputter an ineffectual defense and scurry across the sand before it fried the soles of his feet. He didn't remember being that kind of cruel when he was younger, when the beach really was his, when his generation ran the show. He wished he could ask the guys he'd grown up with, but they were gone, every one of them, leaving him and Loreen in the tar paper shack. The last holdouts from a time when transistor radios ate two batteries a day and pop came in bottles made of glass. People like to say life was simpler then, but Skinny didn't see it that way. What was simple about getting a girl pregnant when both of you were too drunk to care? And there had been nothing simple about confessing their mistake to Loreen's old man, or dealing with the miscarriage a month after their dismal wedding. Skinny would never have imagined himself a catch, but his teen bride made it clear she wasn't ever sharing a roof with her brutish father again. Maybe there was a time when staying together in the tar paper shack had seemed the easiest thing to do. But simple? Skinny didn't think so. The day Loreen's scrawny dog shat on a toddler's sandcastle kingdom, Skinny had no words of defense. "Clean up your moron dog's mess!" shouted one of the teens. Instead, Loreen erupted in merriment. "It's his damn beach," she cackled, meaning her cockapoo, not Skinny. She nearly split a gut laughing while the mutt kicked and exploded walls and bridges to cover his feces where they lay next to the moat in which floated the child's plastic sailboat.
"What kind of nasty bitch are you, anyway?" asked a girl named Tammy.
Skinny had known her aunt, remembered her bikini, the one with the leopard skin pattern.
"You're disgusting, is what you are," said another. "Skinny, clean up the beach."
And they turned their backs and laughed. On the hottest days, Skinny hauled air mattresses across the sand, stopping by the shore to huff and puff them full and round. He and Loreen floated side by side, drifting in lazy circles around one another, paddling with flabby arms like oddly shaped stingrays, alternately soaking belly or back. They'd meander through the best swimming zone, oblivious to the splashing around them. The new air mattresses he'd bought came with cup holders, which is how Skinny came to be at the cottage, refilling their drinks the day Tammy's aunt dropped by the beach. The decades hadn't left as deep a mark on her as on him and Loreen. Standing there with a plastic cup in either hand, he struggled to remember her name. She looked at him as though puzzled by his attention.
"Leopard," he stammered, resorting to her nickname, overcome by memory of a summer 30 years past, her patterned bikini hanging to dry on the rail of his father's porch before Loreen's displaced it. She lowered her sunglasses and studied him a moment. Her eyelashes were as dark and full as he remembered them, her eyes not quite as piercing, more critical than inviting.
"I remember you," she said. "Still here?"
"My sister never got out either." She pointed vaguely upriver. "I guess the beach is all right. Bit of a backwater, though, isn't it?" Together they looked at the water. At its edge, Loreen's mutt was rolling in a pile of river weed that no doubt contained a washed-up sunfish or a child's discarded collection of clams.
"Wasn't this your grandmother's place or something?" Leopard said.
She looked at the porch and beyond it at the shack in which some of Skinny's favorite erotic memories had been born.
"Surprised no one's torn it down yet. Go figure." Tammy called to her from the water,
and Leopard smiled and tossed Skinny a half wave as she walked away. He downed his fresh rum and coke and went inside to refill it before heading back to join Loreen. When he reemerged, Skinny could hear shouts from the water. Two of the teens were dragging Tammy out by the armpits. She coughed up water, stumbled to the dark sand, and collapsed there.
"She kicked her," one of the boys shouted. "Right in the head," said the other. "I saw it. Then she floats away laughing."
"Bitch," said the first. "Tammy could have drowned."
Tammy's aunt leaned over her niece and smoothed the hair from her forehead. Skinny looked from her to Loreen and back. The sand seared his feet, but he stood there, imagining a yellow and brown spotted bikini, thinking it could still fit. He remembered cold sand at night grinding into his kneecaps, sticky grasping and pawing in the shadows far from the bonfire, the soggy smell of riverweed mixed with that of sweat and beer and sex. And then he broke into a trot, splashing his hands with the drinks, and rejoined his wife in the river. That day, like most, Skinny and Laureen outlasted the kids on the beach. They tended to disappear all at once, in different directions. It was as if the coolness factor of hanging on the beach evaporated from one moment to the next, and no self-respecting teen would be caught dead near the water once the sun hit a certain angle. Laureen had dozed off. Skinny nudged her chair with his bare foot, jiggled it a bit until she started, mumbling, "I was just thinking, not asleep." At the sound of her voice, her cockapoo rose from his shaded spot under her chair and shook his foul-smelling coat. They walked behind one another, dragging their lawn chairs up the empty beach to lean them against the porch rail, and disappeared indoors for something quick and easy in the microwave. As long as it didn't rain, the gang reappeared every night after dinner, starting a fire with branches dragged from piles made by cottagers who kept the beachfront neat and tidy. A couple of guys, a tough named Derek among them, could be counted on for larger branches or even cut firewood. Derek was overly fond of construction boots, wearing them to the beach day and night, as if to assert a manliness he had yet to attain. Skinny knew the good wood came from raiding the bonfire materials of folks who were better at planning ahead. He'd even seen Derek march in with 8-foot 2x4s from a worksite 2 doors down. Once or twice over the summer, a couple of guys dragged over a big sun-dried log in a grand show of machismo. The kids debated whether the log was for burning or for sitting on. By the third night, they'd shove it in endwise. Those driftwood logs took weeks to burn, doused by sand and water night after night, and spreading never-ending char on the beach. And Laureen tore a strip off Skinny for his inability to keep the soot from defiling her precious domain. In the warm evening air, he'd sit on his porch and nurse his after-dinner drink through the sunset, while his wife zoned out in front of the TV. He'd listen as a couple teens collected money to buy beer, self-selected for their advanced ability to grow facial hair. Just as he'd once done, they'd buzz across the river to the lenient Quebec side in the fastest tin boat available. Some nights, a pilfered bottle of vodka from a parent's party leftovers would make the rounds, and someone always scored a bag of weed for the evening. It didn't matter how much or how little lubrication there was. Like clockwork, the scene would get rowdy after an hour or two of quiet guitar playing and chatter. If Derek didn't start things, he could be counted on to join in and make them louder. Some nights, his besotted behavior earned him laughter. Other nights, complaint. Regardless, he soaked up the attention, swelled his chest, and jutted his scraggly chin hairs, defying anyone to take him on. This always pumped his friend's reaction to its maximum volume. Meanwhile, by twilight's end, the day's gin produced in Laureen a rumbling anger. "Get those stinking rats off of my beach," she'd hurl at Skinny through the screen. "What kind of limp artist excuse for a man are you anyhow? You can't keep control of a little patch of sand. Get out there and make them shut the hell up, or I'll call the goddamn cops myself." Moments later, Skinny's distended shadow would loom next to the circle of firelight. Ever out of reach, but close enough. When the teens became aware of him, whether by the light catching his hoary face or by the crack of his rum-soaked voice, they'd jump as though poked with a cattle prod.
"Noisy piece of crap, punks. Show some goddamn respect, people trying to sleep for crying out loud."
He'd rattle off a string of filth, invoking God, the devil, and the kids' parents in good measure, always ending with the well-worn threat of a call to the police. The kids would taunt him and occasionally rise as if to challenge him physically, which is probably why, as the summer wore on, Skinny took to carrying a club. He'd peeled the bark off the long handle and ribbed it with a march of knife cuts to ensure a good grip. The business end was a gnarled mess of chopped and healed over stubs where branches once sprouted. So ghastly a growth, it was as if he'd cultivated the tree as a weapon from the time it was a sapling.
"Come on, Skinny, let's wrestle."
"Yeah, bring on your big stick, Skinny."
"Your big hard stick. Bet if your dick was as hard as your stick, your wife wouldn't send you outside every night, eh, Skinny?"
And he'd swear some more and be gone. And at least once a week, the police would show up, and they'd pour the kids' beer on the sand, and maybe Derek would spend a few minutes in the back of the cruiser explaining himself before everyone got sent home earlier than they'd hoped. And on those nights, a shadow that could only be Skinny's would watch their departure from the corner window of the tumble-down cottage on the most perfect part of the beach. By midsummer, the battle for beach supremacy had darkened Skinny's mood. He took to wearing the same stained t-shirt days at a time, would forget to clean the beach most mornings, and muttered obscenities at Lorene's dog when she was out of earshot. One afternoon, the kids heard him talk back to his wife, not once, but twice. First, telling her she should crunch them more slowly if it really mattered so damned much that he'd run out of ice cubes. Then again, a little louder, a little later in the afternoon, when she'd kicked a mother's diaper bag out of her way as she lumbered up the beach for a pee. The bag flew a good 15 feet and spilled its contents onto two teens dry-humping next to the cold fire pit. "Like that's gonna earn us any friends," Skinny said, half under his breath, but not softly enough. "Someone feeling bigger than his britches today?" Lorene asked, twisting her bulk back toward him as she spoke, so that she stumbled and went down on both knees in the white-hot sand. Hands huge as bunched bananas broke her fall, and she stayed there a moment on all fours. Sweat dripped off her chin, making brown dimples in the sand like when a dog shook itself off after a swim. Her eyes bulged with the effort of straightening her back and getting up to one knee. She paused there, mid-rise, cheeks flapping with every breath, giving Skinny enough time to scurry over. One of the kids stood to offer help, but Tammy grabbed his bathing suit and yanked him to the ground. Lorene put both arms on Skinny's shoulders. She pulled herself up while he straightened his own knees. Puffing, she regained most of her uprightness and part of her dignity.
"Holy crap, is he strong," Derek murmured.
She bent over to wipe sand from her kneecaps, then thought better of that posture and lurched forward toward the shelter of the cottage. The gang waited expectantly for Skinny and his wife to return, but they never did. At dinner time, their lounges remained on the shore, a clear glass of gin and warm water twisted into the sand between them, the pink lemon flakes having long since sunk to the bottom. The chairs and glass were gone by the time the evening fire was lit. Much mirth was made over speculation that Skinny's wife had been forced to retrieve it, on her hands and knees no less, Skinny's back having been irreparably knackered by his heroic spousal rescue. Tammy suggested knocking on the cottage door and offering a couple's massage, charged by the pound. Before anyone got up the nerve, Derek and his sidekick arrived in the boat, and bottles clinked, and someone sparked up a joint. Tammy started strumming her guitar, and the night was safe again, until the shadow appeared by the fire. Tonight, no one noticed the intruder until Derek was smashed across the shoulders.
Skinny, you son of a...
Except it wasn't Skinny who'd come to deliver the warning this night, but his wife. Loreen used Skinny's stick to more effect than he had ever mustered. She knocked Derek to the ground, sent him sprawling so close to the fire the hairs on his chin frizzed.
It's time you arseholes leave our beach!
She raised the club high into the air and whacked it against the log, between the two girls who had been sitting either side of Derek.
And I ain't talking about leaving for tonight. I mean for good. I'm sick of you, vermin. All I is.
She beheld the club, seemingly confused as to how it remained intact. She tossed it into the fire, turned, and thumped her way back to the cottage. Skinny peered from the window, his bent silhouette slouched on a wicker chair. Everyone stared across the flickering flames in stunned silence until Derek stood and kicked a beer bottle into the fire.
"We gotta do something," he said, standing there against the night sky. "Something real. We gotta teach Skinny and his hippo wife they can't push us around no more."
"Yeah," Tammy said, "this is our beach, too."
"More our beach," said another girl, using a branch to retrieve Skinny's club from the fire. She rolled it in the sand to extinguish the flames that had already begun to lick it.
"I say we go interrupt their quiet evening." Without waiting for an answer, Derek marched through the bushes where Loreen had passed moments before. Shrugs all round, one by one, everyone followed. He pointed at the cottage roof and twined his fingers together, popping first one then another pal onto the rickety dwelling. The move was repeated until Derek and three others were on the roof, the rest left below.
"Tiptoe," Tammy whispered up at them.
"Like hell. Think they can't hear us? Did you ever hear a freaking chipmunk on the roof? What do you think we sound like?" With that, Derek stomped over to the chimney, stuck his head over the top, and shouted, "Hey, Skinny! Why'd you send your wife tonight? You're not scared, are you?"
The others banged their feet for effect, one making a boot-sized dent in the spongy soft shingles. The chimney was in no better shape, many of the bricks simply resting in place amid crumbling mortar. Derek dropped a loose brick down the flue. It clanged, making a sound he apparently liked. He dropped two more, pausing in between to holler, "What you hiding from, Skinny?" They jumped up and down on the softest part of the roof, kicking shingles and soggy plywood splinters out of the way. Derek hoofed it with his steel-toed boots while his buddy whacked at it with Skinny's club. Before long, a sizable hole offered them a clear view of the living room, its antique lamps sending a pillar of yellow light skyward. Derek grabbed two bricks from the chimney and threw them through the fresh opening. On the ground, the others punched and kicked the south wall. Tammy took a running start and delivered a solid dropkick, landing hard on her hip with a groan. Loreen strutted back and forth, clutching a poker she'd grabbed from the fireplace stand, alternately waving it at the faces taunting her through the hole in the roof and jabbing it at Skinny. He cringed in his chair, watching the teens outside, listening to their anger through the window screen. He barely flinched when Tammy hurled a brick through that screen, the flimsy mesh giving way, slowing but not stopping the thrust. The brick landed next to his feet, and he picked it up, turning it over and over in his hands. A piece of his home. A simple clay brick, a dozen of which lay strewn about their floor. Loreen careened from side to side, attempting to throw some back up, missing the hole in the ceiling. Her dog barking its throat raw from where it hid beneath the table.
"You're a waste of a man!"
His wife's shriek shattered his dream state, and he twisted his neck to look at her. Her hulk blocked the light from the ceiling lamp, so he couldn't tell whether it was Loreen, or the lamp, or the whole damned room that was swaying. He tasted stale rum rise in his throat as he cried out and hurled the brick without aim. It struck Loreen square in the back of her neck, and she ended up on all fours for the second time that day. She pawed at the loose carpet, which slid beneath her knees, failing to find purchase on the slick linoleum floor beneath it. More bricks rained down on her through the hole in the roof. She drove the poker into the floor and used it to lift herself halfway erect, cursing for Skinny to do his part. He watched from across the room, one shaking hand gripping the receiver as the other punched three numbers into the telephone mounted on the wall next to the kitchen. He coughed out their address, then clutched the hook to hang up the call as he slid to the floor and watched the fight go out of his wife's battered body. There were no teens to toss in the back of the cruiser by the time the police showed up. They'd left all at once, vanishing along with Loreen's spirit. The officers kicked sand over the fire where it would burn through the night. They took Skinny's statement while the paramedics did their best to revive his wife. They weren't surprised he didn't know which kids had shown up that night. They'd run an investigation, had their ideas. Maybe something would come of it. He refused their entreaties to attend the hospital, saying only he'd find some plastic in the shed next morning to cover the hole in his roof until it could be repaired. That he'd like to stay alone on the beach tonight, if they didn't mind. Swimming classes were canceled for the rest of the week. Remnants of yellow police tape fluttered around the beach. The parents of city kids didn't want to answer awkward questions. Someone dropped off a shepherd's pie and a card signed by three neighbors. People either nodded or averted their gaze when they passed Skinny's porch on their way by, but no one stopped to say hello. After one night's absence, the teens returned and gathered those bits and pieces of yellow tape to burn in a ritual that celebrated ownership of the most precious beach in the bay. From where he sat on his porch, Skinny smelled the burning plastic. There'd be a little less garbage to pick up in the morning. He thought he saw a couple disappear into the darkness behind an overturned canoe two doors down. And he listened to the guitar and drank rum and felt part of it all.
Skinny's Beach is copyrighted by Rob Brunette. Music for the podcast is by Adam Wachanek and was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at ellerykweenmysterymagazine.com.